How's your Facebook searches for MR2s going?
I don't know, man. I can't find any. Like, the stuff that I'm finding, like, for like some of the MR2 shells, they're, you know, these guys, they want $5,000 for automatic, non-turbo, rusted out, you know, cars. And, like, I just can't do that. Like,
I have not seen a price that low. I still look pretty often or whatever, and I always check out MR2s a little bit just for you. And the prices I see are absurd.
Well, but the problem is that, like, half the cars are, like, I mean, the fact is there's some dude selling one that looks like the body's fairly straight. Can't really tell until I go look at it. But, like, he wants, like, 14 grand for a non-turbo.
Is it blue? Because I saw a blue.
No, it's black. But I think, I just personally think that, you know, some of these people, they may be, like, what's that term? Sniffing crack. That's what it was.
Okay.
Well, because here's the thing. It's not the fact that the cars aren't limited in numbers, right? Like, that's going to drive values up. We get that. The problem I guess I have is that you can ask that kind of money for a car that's straight. You can ask that car kind of money for a car that's, you know, arguably non-turbo.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask that kind of money for a car, maybe, if a clean body, the right condition, a non-turbo automatic. Because, right. But you cannot ask that type of money for a clapped out, rusted, kind of peeling in paint, faded clear coat, tops leak, nothing going on car, and then be like, yeah, bro, you know what we got. No.
I've been looking a little bit, and since I know that you would probably be doing an engine swap on that car, that I know that you're primarily looking for, you know, ultimately a stick turbo and good condition in terms of body. And that's what I've been looking for. But honestly, I think...
I would take a non-turbo.
Yeah.
I think ideally, for me to do a swap, a non-turbo T-top...
It's right. The T-top is mandatory for you.
I want the T-tops.
I know, yeah.
If I'm going to do it, it's got to be T-tops. So I want a manual. It could be non-turbo. And it can be, you know, as long as that T-tops, I'm flexible and everything else. Can't be rusted and clapped out. Paint can be faded, not in good condition. All that stuff. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I need to have a straight car.
But when I have been looking for prices on stuff like that, I think that you have to kind of lower your expectations on budget a little bit or whatever. Or expand your budget a little bit.
Well, how much do you think I would go up to? For what I just described,
I don't know. I mean, how much do I think you would go up to? I think you would go up to less than what I would go up to if I had the same project in mind.
Well, I mean, that's clear with everything you buy.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally have to feel a certain way about a car to feel like I have a good starting point.
But you're the same way as me. Like, I'm obsessive in the sense I'm constantly checking out the market. And when I see things are following certain trends, I'm not the person that say, I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to wait it out until prices come down. If that's the way the market is right now, it is what it is. If I want to buy something, I have to deal with it.
So I don't think, I understand your point. I don't think that's the mindset. I think my mindset is like for me to want to do this project, I need to be like here, right? Like, I know that if I'm going to buy a non-turbo car, right in that sentence, it doesn't matter anything further. Turbo, I mean, automatic, manual, doesn't matter. As soon as you say non-turbo, I'm swapping the thing.
Right. And then I know you're primarily looking for maybe a K or something like that to throw into it, but are there any other engines that you would consider?
Not really into an MR2. I think... You know, some of those guys, they do like the 1UZ stuff, you know what I mean? Or the 2UZ stuff. It's not really my cup of tea, not really my speed. I think for some other cars, maybe there'd be some different engines. I'll tell you that the engine that I want to be real so bad that's just not is that that 3.6 liter, you know, LS based prototype that we saw a few years ago from you know, at SEMA.
Which one's that?
So it's a 3.6 liter. I don't think the bottom end architecture is LS, but the head isn't. I think it's an LS7 head.
Oh, it's the four cylinder one that from from Chevy, and that never came. That
well, it wasn't from Chevy.
Oh,
see, it was actually from a company called Blueprint Engines. And it, you know, for the most part, I think, like, if you know, they're around in the sense of, like, if you want to go get, like, a quote-unquote crate motor.
Yeah.
But maybe not go through GM, you know, performance or something like that. They offer a lot of those options for some of the very popular, you know, kind of V8 big block
so,
stuff.
They so they're not, an OE, they're not an OE manufacturer, obviously, so but they're just... a company that builds engines?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I do think, you know, obviously a lot of guys use them as a, maybe an OE alternative in certain senses, but they, yeah, they have that engine, man. So it was a 3.6 liter. I'm going to butcher this a little bit, but I'm going to try. It was a 3.6 liter, used an LS, 3.6 liter four cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
It used LS7 head. It used a lot of LS parts in the bottom end, you know, main bearings, caps, stuff like that. It also used some of the Ford Windsor stuff, right? Which makes it super interesting. And I even remembered at the time they said something about like the deck could actually accept the Ford Windsor head as well. So, wow. Like, you're really combining a lot of stuff. But 340 horsepower, 3.6 liter four-cylinder.
That's crazy.
Well, wait, it gets worse. It gets more crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
This is why I think the engine's so, like, ridiculous. At 1,800 RPMs, they were saying that engine had over 500 foot-pounds of torque.
Throw you back into your seat.
Especially when you coupled it with a turbo.
Damn.
Now, the reason they say that is because originally I think they were saying that the engine had some intentions on it being used in a more industrial sense, that the block that they're using has been used in an industrial sense, like in generators and different things like that.
Oh, I see.
So in heavy equipment and stuff like that. So the interesting thing there is that if you take that engine, it was always meant to be a continuous use industrial type engine, which means that block is most likely super stout. Hmm. It means it's meant to hold, to run that power in a sustained period, right? So, but I think it was based off of like some sort of GM 3.0 liter type of thing. But what's interesting is, so you put an LS7 head, you got a really beefy block, like you have... hopefully, if it's an LS7 head, and I remember correctly, they've already done the valve bronze guide thing. But this engine made a gripping amount of torque really fast, right? So now when you think about the fact that you can then with turbo, I mean, you're talking about diesel-like type stuff.
Yeah.
Out of a four-cylinder. So you think about the size impact, and man, think about what you could put that thing into.
Almost anything.
Almost anything.
Wait, so yeah. I'm not familiar with Blueprint engines.
Engines?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with them. So they decided not to make this engine.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if they decided not to. I know that they haven't made it. Hmm. This was a prototype, I think, that they put out that they were kind of looking into.
I don't know. Are there engines that they do make that people, you know, I don't know. I'm sure they do. I don't know what engine.
Yeah, they make engines, but they're like replacement, like, you know, 396 big block cars, I mean, 396 motors and, you know, and 427s and stuff like that.
You tell me, I mean, why is it so because I don't know the answer to this, I'm genuinely curious, is when manufacturers or engineers are making new engines and stuff like that, why is it so uncommon to see less cylinder, higher displacement cars? Like...
Higher displacement. Why do you think that's common, though?
For performance. Let me rephrase it, because the obvious answer is for fuel economy. But, like...
Well, no, wait. Less displacement, higher horsepower? Is that what you said?
No, higher displacement, lower cylinder. So four-cylinder, big displacement engines. Like,
but who's really doing that?
No one. That's my question.
Oh, you mean don't they?
Yes, and this would be an example of them doing that, of a 3.6 liter, you know, four cylinder. It's not all that common. Like normally,
well, I think at that point it's about efficiency. Like let's compare something that's probably really on par, so to speak. Let's use the new GR Corolla, right? Newer GR Corolla.
Yeah.
Not new anymore.
Super low displacement, three cylinder.
Right, but out of that three cylinder, you get
300 horsepower,
around 300 horsepower.
Yeah, 100 horsepower in a cylinder, right? Yeah.
Right, but you know, you don't have nearly the amount of torque
that
other thing had, right?
Yeah.
And I also think that obviously one is going to be much more heavy duty. Like I think that four cylinder version that they talked about, not only can you make a lot more power out of it through turbos and some different things like that, and then you know then. you know, I mean, who knows, cams, all these different things. I mean, the oyster is, you know, then opened. The world is your oyster, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're much more savvy with, you know, the anatomy of an engine than I am. But, you know, I just, like, it makes me think of, like, have you seen recently that Mercedes, for one of their new AMG cars or something like that, they were saying that they were going to do four-cylinder hybrid, all this stuff, whatever, and everyone's like, no, and huge backlash. And just recently they said, we're ditching the four-cylinder hybrid, going back to a V8. And everyone's like, huzzah! Like, you, but, you know, the, my point to that is, I hear Max laughing over there, so it made me chuckle. But my point to that is, like, when people are trying to, you know, go to performance-oriented engines for engineers and manufacturers, why don't they look for a more unconventional thing with this kind of configuration?
I would guess that this motor is, you know, this engine is not efficient almost any way. But I don't think the point of this engine is to be efficient. Mm-hmm. I think it's to make gobs of power in a really small footprint. You know what I mean? So, like, I think what makes this car cool is, like, you know,
I'm such a neutral person.
You've seen a car, like when people do those ridiculous, you know, I mean, and I say ridiculous, not in a necessarily bad way, but, like, those ridiculous, you know, Hellcat swaps into Miatas, you know, just some real interesting stuff. I mean, this thing would not be hard to shoehorn. And if I remember correctly, the big sell at the time was the fact that it could almost use any GM Bell housing, right? So now you open yourself up to a tremendous amount of gearbox mating options. Mm-hmm. So I think it's super cool. I mean, the footprint's really small. It's really compact. It uses a lot of parts that seem to be off the shelf ready, which is interesting. It seems to have a really stout design. I think it's a pretty home run type of engine, and I would be thrilled to get my hands on one to be able to.
I would imagine that the response to this was probably pretty positive. I'm surprised that they didn't go ahead and.
It was at the time. I remember it, like, being a pretty big discussion at the show. Like, people were pretty, like yeah. What, you know?
Yeah.
And then a long time ago, Motor Trend had came up with an article about it, and they really, I think that really spun it even further. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to get my hands on one of those things.
Man, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, in terms of, like, crate engines and stuff like that, how come, I wonder why there's not more engine companies that are producing similar, you know, similar kind of configured engines to maybe more sought after engines out there.
I don't know. I mean, you maybe know? Supply and demand. I mean, I don't know how much this thing would be if they retailed it. Like, you know, I mean, like, obviously a price tag could kill that engine. You know, we love four cylinders and things like that to put out some good power.
Yep.
But we also love cheap.
It's true.
Right? Like, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, if you do a K swap the right way, it's not cheap.
Yeah.
Right. Like, but you're still going to spend, you know, to get parts, and then, but you're also buying a lot of other things. Like, in other words, if I do an, you know, one of those K swaps, and I'm going to put it into a let's say an MR2, you know, yeah, if I build the motor, right. Okay. And, you know, and you don't necessarily have to, right? But then, you know, gearboxes are where that thing really starts to suffer once you start to, you know, make above, let's say, you know, 300 horsepower. So now you're talking about building a gearbox. Well, building a gearbox for a K-swap is probably like $8,000 by the time you get done with, like, buying one of those, you know, gear sets and doing the whole thing to be able to support that kind of power. So, you know, you're spending that money somewhere. It's just maybe not wherever. So if you can get this engine, let's say, for around, you know, let's say it ends up being $8,000 or whatever it is, and then you can mate it with, you know, a good junkyard trans that came out of some other GM.
Yeah.
You know, some other, you know, GM platform gives you a 5-speed or a 6-speed or something like that. I think it could be really cool.
Then, like, all of a sudden you have kind of like the whole thing for a lot, you know, more affordable, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're talking about making motor mounts and, you know, some stuff like that. I mean, I don't know, you know, what an intake like this would look like. You know, I don't know if it's like a, you know, I don't know what an exhaust manifold like this would look like. I mean, I would assume that if you're using an LS7 head, you know, you're going to use some sort of architecture from, you know, like an LS7 intake type thing, and somehow have to model it to kind of close off the other, you know, bank, so there's no, like, you know, galley that feeds both. And then I also think that, you know, you're obviously going to probably use, like, one header from one side of of, you know, the an LS7 engine, but you know, there's so many different possibilities.
If I was an OE manufacturer, like, I think that I would know if I had to look at sales and see that maybe some new car sales aren't going so well or whatever it may be, and you look statistically on how many of your cars are still on the road, and like there's like a lot of older models that, you know, people are still buying, using, etc. I feel like as an OE, they should definitely drop crate engines in, you know, targeted older vehicles that they know are on the road still. Those people can kind of get a more refreshed, newer engine, up to date. I feel like that would be a great idea. Just saying.
Well, I think some people do. I think some companies do. I mean, GM has had a dedicated, you know, crate engine. I mean, GM Performance is a division of GM, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they've done it for a long time. I think Ford tried it for a little bit. You know, they were really pushing that Illuminator and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I've seen Mazda do some of those things a little bit. You're right. I mean, I think the issue is that there is probably this next level of, you know, liability and issues and things like that that probably keep them from doing it. The same way when people walk up to us and say, oh, well, would you build this wheel like this?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Oh.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I was going to change the subject pretty hard right there. But
do it.
You want me to?
I don't care.
Oh, Max showed me an interesting article earlier on something about the Honda's using resonator technology on their wheels to make the tire sound, like, you know, quieter, you know, on the road. So they're putting like these little like sound deadening things on top of the barrel of the rims.
Right, to stop the harmonization from going to the wheel.
Is that interesting?
I guess.
I'm sorry. I thought that was pretty interesting.
I'm not sure to keep tire noise down. Why don't we just bang a better tire?
That's true.
I feel like everybody knows when they get a tire that has too much road noise.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bitch about the tire and then you buy one that actually doesn't make road noise.
I mean, yeah, but right? I mean, hey, listen, it just might be a little extra thing. I thought it was actually a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
If it's something that simple where you just need to put some sound dead and stuff.
I guess, but like, how do you absorb the harmonics from a tire when essentially you're basically at that point, I think the only thing we can be talking about is they're worried about the harmonics from the tire and the road actually feeding back through the wheel.
Yeah. So they said that they were able to pick up the frequency of the sound on the road and then do, I guess, some sort of math to figure out the size and shape of the resonator they
would
need.
Oh, that's some black magic stuff.
Yeah. But that's what it seemed like, at least. But I thought that was interesting. While we were talking about OEs, that came to my head.
So somewhere in Detroit, there's a dude hanging out a window with a little,
yes,
a little microphone,
he's
trying to get the decibels and so he can get the right frequency so he can try to tune it out.
Yep.
Oh, man. Have we not had anything else that we can worry about?
No, that really shouldn't be on the top priority list. But listen, if it made your ride dead quiet in terms of road noise, that'd be kind of cool. I think it would be cool.
I don't know. I think it depends what it is. I mean, this wheel noise, I don't want to hear wheel and tire noise, but like, you know, I think some noise is good.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that's it, right?
Yeah.
Wow. I think we knocked it back. I think here's the thing. My whole thing is that I like the idea of being able to swap platforms. I think that if we keep, if there becomes these viable options, like if you could buy a blueprint type of an engine that has a small architecture like this, like, and I think about it, like if somebody made affordable K-series engines.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was saying earlier, kind of.
Yeah, I understand.
Less. Yeah.
But somebody made these affordable engines and then put them out there. Like, I think that, you know, swaps and cars and horsepower would live on. I mean, the problem that you always have is that the EPA is trying to kill anything that has nothing to do with this.
But, yeah.
You know, that doesn't has anything to do with, you know, modifying Fun. Whatever. I don't know how engines like this would really exist in certain states like California or, you know, maybe even New York, where maybe, like, I don't know how the emissions would even work on something like this.
Yeah.
You'd have to probably put it in something that's 25 years older and something like that. But
we're not able to be used on the street.
Yeah, but man, do I love the fact that you could, like, have something that had so much principal architecture based on very popular engines, but is its own animal. Like, I think that's a home run. I really wish they put that out. I would drop that. I could think of countless cars to drop that into. It just looks great.
You got a perfect one at home that would take that perfectly. So.
Oh, yeah.
That would be sick, but.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I'm a little upset that we don't get that kind of fun.
Well, you could. All they got to do is make it. I mean, they made it. It's just a question of, you know, I wonder what happened. Like, I wonder if we could ever figure that out. Like I wonder if it's one of those things that was like, we should do it. And they're like, well, I'm not really sure how this would react. Or if it was like, they tried to do it, and when they started using it, they realized there was problems with it.
Well, if anyone knows the guys over Blueprint, let us know.
Yeah, if you know the Blueprint Engine guys, or girls, whoever's over there, give a shout over there, and tell them to let us know what the heck's going on with this four cylinder.
Because we
want to
know.
We want the four cylinder. We want
it is four cylinder. Four cylinder.
Four cylinder.
Four cylinder.
No, it's not. What? Oh, yes, it is. Come on. All right, we want the four-cylinder, 3.6 liter LS-based engine. We want it. It's got to happen.
There you go.
Let's do it. Anyhow, you have any engines you think are prime candidates for stuff like this? If you have any tips on this engine, let us know what you think. Would you buy one of these things? Let's say price point being around $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
Would you buy one of these things, put a turbo on it, and see what else can...
And go have a blast.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
So let us know down. We'll catch you later.